It's Morning Edition on NHPR. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. Midterm elections will soon be upon us. I know, but they will. And some campaigns are gaining traction here in New Hampshire. Joining me now with some of our first updates from the campaign trail is NHPR's senior political reporter, Josh Rogers. Morning, Josh.
Good morning, Rick.
Okay, let's start with the race for governor. There was some news this week there. The former executive counselor, Cindy Warmington, jumped into the Democratic primary. This is not her first run for governor. What should we know about her campaign launch?
Well, her entrance into this race has been expected for some time. It comes as Democrats here are, you know, increasingly feeling good about, or at least better about their chances unseating Governor Kelly Ayotte. They see her now as maybe beatable. I would say maybe. New Hampshire governors do almost always get a second term, but polling doesn't show Governor Ayotte is in a commanding position as she'd probably like to be. And while she's worked to keep some political distance between herself and President Trump, that sort of maneuvering is going to get more complicated the closer we get to Election Day. And, you know, in Warmington's launch video announcing her candidacy, Donald Trump came up several times, his tariffs, the economy, and pointedly the potential ICE facility in Merrimack. That's an issue that people are paying attention to and which, you know, probably could hurt Ayotte, depending on how this plays out. It's been weeks since the facility's been, you know, known about it in the news, and the governor's really not been able to say whether she's fine with an ICE detention center being located here or not. So, you know, for Warmington and any other Democrat running, that's something they have going for them. But there are legitimate questions as to whether Warmington is the best option for Democrats. You know, she came in second in the primary 2 years ago. She's competent in the party's mainstream, you know, liberal on social issues. She says she opposes broad-based taxes, but her past work on behalf of a chain of pain clinics and as a lobbyist for Purdue Pharma was, you know, an issue that complicated her run last time, and it's an issue Ayotte's campaign is already hammering her on.
So, right. They released a semi yesterday about that right away.
Yeah.
And Newmarket businessman John Kuiper, the only other candidate officially in the race for the Democratic nomination at this point, he's also run before. What have we heard from him thus far?
Well, you know, he's really running as an outsider. You know, he really doesn't have another option, and he's focused on, you know, what he says are real people and their issues. Housing is a focus of his, but it's far from clear. I'd say that Kuiper is capable of generating much traction. He has some support from, you know, he needs support from the Democratic Party's mainstream, but it's not clear he can get that. And Kuiper's running a shoestring campaign, and he's acknowledged that winning is probably a long shot. But he also, it ought to be noted, greeted Warmington's entrance into the race by mentioning her ties to the opioid crisis and also arguing that they're disqualifying.
Any other candidates expected to join this race, Josh?
Portsmouth Mayor Deglan McEachern, a Democrat, is looking at running. He says right now his focus is on making sure his party has a candidate who can win in November and, as he told me yesterday, take the fight to Kelly out on a range of issues. You know, McEachern says he's not sure the party has that at present in Warmington, and he says he expects to announce whether he runs, you know, in a couple of weeks.
Okay, we'll be watching for that. Of course, Governor Ayotte seeking a second term. What are you expecting from her as, you know, she's kind of shifts her energy toward campaigning?
Well, I think she's going to focus a great deal on, you know, metrics that she will say shows that she's been successful, safety statistics, statistics about New Hampshire's healthiness, a good place to raise a family, that we have a low tax burden, those sorts of things we often hear from incumbent governors. And, you know, she's proud of New Hampshire, wants to preserve what makes it special. And, you know, any move to compromise that is something she'll fight. But, you know, a challenge for her is to keep the focus on the race as she defines it in those terms.
Right.
The fact that she'll have a lot of money to spend, likely way more than any Democrat, could help her. But this is a very volatile political moment. And, you know, Kellyette's a very, very deliberate politician, and she's got a lot to navigate.
Yeah, and actions on the federal level could really impact this
race,
obviously. And do you expect her to bring back the Don't Mass Up New Hampshire slogan?
I suspect we could hear that.
Okay. What about the U.S. Senate race, Josh? I want to turn to that for a minute. Senator Jean Shaheen, of course, not seeking reelection. Congressman Chris Pappas hoping to take her place. Former Senator Johnny Sununu looking to reclaim the seat that he held before Shaheen beat him back in 2008. How is that race looking?
Well, Chris Pappas hasn't ever run statewide, but he has been on the state ballot in every election in New Hampshire, state election, since I think the year 2000, and he's only lost one time. So He has a track record of winning elections, sometimes tough elections. John E. Sununu has certainly won some very big races. He's also named Sununu, but he hasn't been on the ballot since 2008. You know, both these guys have primaries to get through. Sununu faces former Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown. So he potentially has more to contend with than Pappas does. But I and many other people are really waiting and watching to see how Sununu, you know, who last won an election in 2002, how well he can connect with voters in 2026. You know, he's been endorsed by President Trump fully and completely, is what the president said, which may help in a Republican primary, but could bring complications during a general election. So, you know, while Sununu's resume, three terms in Congress, a term in the Senate, shows he's been there, it doesn't necessarily mean voters want to send him back. And so, you know, while he makes the case he can serve New Hampshire and feels called to do so, you know, he's going to get a lot of attention on the years after he left the Senate, years in which he made a lot of money, worked at a lobbying firm, sat on corporate boards, you know, golden parachute kind of stuff. Yeah. Neither Pappas or Sununu are really doing much publicly at this point. But, you know, sooner or later, we're really going to get to see how they're connecting or not with voters.
Well, Pappas was trying to do that yesterday. He was joined in Manchester by Pete Buttigieg, the former Secretary of Transportation, who also maybe or may not run for president. What happened there yesterday?
Well, nothing too remarkable about what I witnessed. Pappas and Buttigieg visited the Puritan restaurant owned by the Pappas family. The duo did some glad-handing with diners and took some questions from reporters. Both were quick to criticize the possible ICE facility in Merrimack and the conduct of ICE more broadly. Besides hanging with Pappas yesterday, Buttigieg joined Congresswoman Maggie Goodlander in Nashua for town hall. You know, according to Buttigieg, this visit was really about backing candidates who will be on the ballot this fall. But, you know, he certainly faced the kinds of questions possible presidential candidates get when they show up here. And, you know, he was noncommittal about his future plans, but he did say his connection to New Hampshire has really only deepened since he left the presidential race. So
okay.
Know that, Rick.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's, of course, other visits scheduled in the next couple of weeks with candidates. We know Gavin Newsom is scheduled to be in the state next week and others as well. NHPR senior political reporter Josh Rogers, thanks so much for joining
us this morning. You're welcome, Rick.
A federal court issued a ruling this week that ends the Trump administration's ban on diversity and equity initiatives in public schools, and that includes here in New Hampshire. NHPR's senior political senior reporter, Anne-Marie Timmons, has been following this, and she joins us now. Good morning, Anne-Marie.
Good morning, Rick.
Anne-Marie, there have been a number of different lawsuits challenging DEI bans in schools on the federal level and on the state level as well. So what's significant about this particular case?
Well, this case really challenged the Trump administration's DEI ban, which would have withheld federal money from schools if they continued any kind of diversity and equity program. And while federal funding isn't the primary source of school budgets, that's local tax dollars, school districts say we really can't afford to lose any money at all. The order from the Trump administration came out mid-February, and NEA, New Hampshire, and then four school districts in New Hampshire and civil rights groups sued about 3 weeks later. And what we saw recently was not a decisive win you might expect in a lawsuit, but rather the Trump administration just said, we're going to abandon this initiative and we're not going to enforce it anywhere in the country.
Yeah, why do you think they did that?
Well, I was at the hearing, one of the court proceedings on this early on, and as the judge was asking questions of the federal government, the lawyers had to keep taking a break and said, can we call Washington and get an answer to that? It was surprising how often that happened. And so they just appeared unable to defend this order in the face of these questions from the judge.
How will that decision relate to other DEI lawsuits involving New Hampshire schools? I'm thinking specifically of, you know, state initiatives and state lawmakers and their initiatives, too.
It doesn't seem to have any effect on the attitude of Republicans in the state, which is we're going to move ahead and try to ban DEI. We have two other lawsuits pending. One is challenging the state's DEI ban that Republicans tucked into the budget last year. That's even a little broader than what the Trump administration sought to do because of the way it's written. Some people would say it could even include special education or free and reduced lunch, which are equity programs. And so that case is pending before the same judge that just heard the Trump administration case. There's also an older lawsuit that challenges the 2021 divisive concepts ban, which limited teachings on racism and discrimination. A New Hampshire federal judge found that unconstitutional. The state is appealing that decision now, and so that also remains in court.
Now, Anne-Marie, you've also been following efforts of the State House to open up enrollment across New Hampshire school districts, Republican lawmakers backing a bill that would allow students to attend any public school in the state. What's their argument in support of this change? Remind us of that.
For Republicans, it's really about one more option for school choice. If you think your school is not serving your needs, you'd be able to go anywhere in the state. And so it's sort of another tool in the toolbox, they say, similar to the state's version of vouchers and charter schools. So one more option for students and families.
What are some of the ways that this could affect districts?
They're really citing two primary concerns. One is they wouldn't be able to predict enrollment, which is the foundation of their budgets. And one, if one of their school students went to another school, they would have to send their money to that school district to educate their student. And for some districts, you know, that could be $15,000, $20,000 a year that they would lose toward another school district.
Yeah. And as you said earlier, districts really can't afford to lose any budget right now. We're seeing multiple districts grapple with huge deficits. Claremont and Pittsfield come to mind. And this week, the Concord Monitor reported that its district is facing a $17 million shortfall in Concord. And there's low-income districts with a perennial budget issue. I imagine some districts are just not in the position to lose that money if a large number of students were to leave.
They would be. On the other hand, the bill's supporters would say, well, you have one less student to educate, so it's kind of a wash. You just take that student's money and give it to another district. I think what school districts would say that overlooks is that budgets don't work that way. You know, while we can break it down to a per student spending, it really is a budget that serves the school globally. And so one student leaving is not going to lower the light bill or mean one fewer bus or one fewer teacher.
Right.
So they are concerned about that.
Well, when it comes to open enrollment, New Hampshire Senate Republicans are fast tracking the bill right now without hearings. Why are they pushing this through so quickly?
They'd really like to get this in place now as we're seeing communities across the state set their budgets. They want to get ahead of that. They also want to get ahead of these caps that districts are setting right now. You know, I looked about 40 different districts, and they're starting to go through the town school district meeting process. I haven't found one that would allow any of their students to leave. They want to cap that at zero. And then you see on the other end for incoming, different caps. You know, some would take zero students, some would take two or three or only into a certain program. Mm-hmm. The schools that have really, you know, strong, very significant declines in enrollment are open to many, many more students.
Yeah.
But they want to get ahead of that.
Yeah, lawmakers are trying to get ahead. NHPR's senior reporter Anne-Marie Timmons covering youth and education here in New Hampshire. Anne-Marie, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you.
You can find more of her work and all the stories that we talked about this morning, as always, at nhpr.org. And we're here next Friday with more. I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR.